I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Today's guest on the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast is one of the most talented and single most creative folks in hockey media. She's the winner of Gillette Drafted Season 3, one of the many talents to come out of that famous television studio on King Street in downtown Toronto, and now a reporter and host with the NHL Network, and more specifically, co-host of NHL Now weekdays at 4 p.m. with EJ Raddick. It's Jackie Redman. Jackie, how you doing?
First of all, Cuthbert, your check's in the mail. Thanks for the slew of compliments there. I appreciate them. I'm doing great. My fiance and I just got a hot tub, so we're, you know, reaping the rewards of that while I'm home for a week and just hanging out and enjoying life. But yeah, things are good.
Mid-March hot tub. I mean, sun's coming out. Spring is in the air. We still have a lot of hockey to discuss.
Things are happening.
You know what? It was a bit of a dark week with, you know, anniversaries of certain things that we're not going to discuss right now, but things are looking up.
Yes, yes, they are. We don't need to dwell on anniversaries right now. I've never been a big fan of them anyway.
I agree. Okay, so I mentioned midway mark of the season. The meat of this conversation is going to be an NHL awards outlook, which I'm happy and excited to discuss with you at the 50%-ish checkpoint. But as I do with most guests, I'm going to force you to talk about yourself a little bit. And I am a sports broadcasting nerd. It is deep in my bones. So I'm particularly excited to talk about the beginnings or your beginnings in this industry. Now, we're about the same age, but I feel like I was just a little kid when I watched you on Gillette Drafted, which, for those who don't know, is essentially a reality competition, or was a reality competition, to become a host at The Score, which was an upstart television brand in Canada that produced so many talented broadcasters, many of them in major markets, many of them on major networks. So how was it then, if we're basically the same age, as I mentioned, and I was doing God knows what at the University of Western Ontario, were you not just polished, but prepared to do the work, and also able to handle everything that goes along with being part of a reality series?
Well, first off, I would say, I think about this all the time. What would the Canadian sports landscape specifically look like without The Score television network? I mean, yeah. Tim McAuliffe, Sid Sixero, Elliot Friedman, Adnan Virk, who's in the U.S. now, but is an incredible talent as well. It's wild. Cabby. I mean, it's so crazy to think of the talent that came out of The Score. But I was a baby when I did Gillette Drafted. Like, I really had very, very little experience. Like, I was working in radio in London, Ontario, sort of cutting my teeth, volunteering at Rogers Television, also in London, Ontario, working at Old Navy. Like, I was doing a million things, just trying to figure out how I was going to get into sports. And, you know, it's a bit of a long story, but I only ended up on Gillette Drafted because I had spent 6 months auditioning back and forth from London to Toronto for this daily hockey show that was supposed to be a thing in Canada years and years ago. And it came down to me and two other people. They were looking for a male and a female host. And I didn't get it. They were like, you know, you're really young, you're green, you just need a little more reps before, you know, you're ready for this. So I didn't get it. I was devastated. I thought, you know, my life was over because I figured that was going to be it for me. And then I want to say maybe a month to 6 weeks later, the casting agent called me back and said, hey, there's this reality show. And I knew it because I watched the first two seasons as well. And they were like, it's Gillette Drafted. They want to get another look at you. The Score does. So they want you to submit an audition tape for that. And I was like, I don't know, like, Gillette Drafted, I got to talk about all sports. Like, I'll have to talk about soccer and tennis and like things that I'm not well versed in, Whereas the audition I was doing prior was all hockey, which I felt very comfortable with. But my dad convinced me to do it. He's like, just do it. Who cares? If you have to do something soccer related, just like own that you don't know soccer and that people will at least respect that. So I went for it. I did it. And it was still the one of the most crazy things that I've ever done. Like, it feels like that was a different life. It doesn't almost doesn't feel like it was a real thing that happened to me. But yeah, it was terrifying. I was scared every single day. I like didn't know what I was doing. I was just a nervous wreck, but I was just trying to, you know, get my shot. And so it worked out for me, obviously, but it was a crazy experience. And people will say to me, oh, well, you know, you lucked out, like you won a contest. And I was like, okay, you go on national television and audition and interview for a job for 2 months and see how easy it is. It's not an easy thing to do, that's for sure.
And not to be disrespectful to the other winners, but there are other winners, and certainly they don't have the platform that you have right now. So you've almost separated yourself from the championship you know, alumni from Gillette Drafted as well.
My mom used to always say, because everyone used to really bother me, right? Like, I wasn't used to criticism because I had never worked in a public space before when I very first started there. And I remember people would say that stuff to me on Twitter, and my mom would just be like, block it out and just focus on being like the Kelly Clarkson of Gillette Drafted. Like, just try to like separate yourself from the contest if you can. And so that was always like in the back of my mind. All right. You're Carrie Underwood. You're just going to work really hard, and like your work will speak for itself one day.
Nice. I didn't know you worked in London. I mean, I knew my head was very far into the sand when I was in university, but it was even beyond what I initially thought. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember you being this extreme front runner on that series or that season of Gillette Drafted. You know, you mentioned being a nervous wreck. Did that help? Did you know that you were in that position, and did that help at all?
Well, there's two things, and I'm just gonna tear down the fourth wall and get really real about the experience, because okay. I like you, Cuthbert, so I feel like I'm gonna just open up the door here. So first thing, because I had auditioned for 6 months for a completely different show, I had already met Greg Sansone. I had sat in a conference room with him, done like an actual formal interview after a bunch of auditions. And so I went in and I was like, oh man, like they kind of like handpicked me for this top 10. So I was feeling good when I first arrived. And you arrive about a week before shooting starts, and you know, you learn all about the sponsor Gillette and how it's going to work and sort of how to you know, to promote the brand throughout the show, and like the sort of like verbiage and keywords they want you to use, that sort of like just sort of like promo stuff. And I remember getting there and being, you know, pulled aside at one point, not by Greg, but by one of the high up producers, and him being like, all right, listen, you did really good in the auditions, but don't think you're the only person that was, you know, like picked to be here. Like, there's other people in this competition that have interned or done other things that are part of this cast. So like, you know your place, that sort of like sort of pep talk before it all started.
Right.
So then I was terrified. I was like, okay, like I get it. Like I have to like prove myself. Like I'm not here, you know, as like a front runner. But that season, the way that it worked, if you won the challenge, then you got immunity for the next elimination. So like if you won, so I won the first challenge of the whole thing. And so that meant no matter how terrible I did in the second challenge, they couldn't send me home. So it was a big deal. And I won 3 of the first 4 immunities, which, I mean, yeah, it's pretty great, right? Except that the cast sort of turned on me at that point and like didn't really want to like associate with me. And like there was, because you're all staying in the same hotel, right? So on top of just like the nervousness of the competition and that sort of thing, it's like there was very much a bit of a target on my back, so to speak. After that, it was a little harder to like go to lunch with like some of my castmates. We're all good, like, and we're all friends, but it was definitely awkward and weird. So I was just like, once I got through week 4, I felt very like isolated almost. So I was just like, oh gosh, like now like no one wants to hang out with me, and I'm doing this like crazy nerve-wracking competition.
it was a reality show after all. It wouldn't be a reality yeah. show, I guess, without targets on people's backs. Were you as big of a fan as I was of the score? I mean, Timmins said, you already mentioned, recently ending their run. A lot of folks been reminiscing about the good old days. Cabby, yourself, Cam Stewart, all the others who plied their trade there first. Being so creative yourself, was that different attitude or approach that they had as intriguing as it was for many?
I honestly, yeah, I was a huge fan. I loved, I don't know if you remember The Break, which Renee Paquette used to host. It was very like, it was similar to Katie Nolan's No Filter, mm-hmm. but it kind of, I don't know who started doing it first, but she was doing a very similar like pop culture sports segment where she would make jokes about whatever the hot topics in sports were. But I love that show. I obviously love Jerry D, Sports Reporter, Cabby yeah. on the Street. Like, I loved The Score. So for me, I knew a lot about The Score prior to even the audition process. Because there was people there that were having fun and doing things like Cabby on the Street was so far ahead of his time. Like yeah. Cabby Cabral was a sports personality before.
It's Cabral now?
Yeah. Yeah. We're tight. You know, I can call him that. No. I think like he was a sports personality in Canada before that was really a thing. Same yeah. with Jerry D, you know, like you didn't really see that. At least when I was a kid, I wasn't aware of people that were real like personality driven in what they did. And so I was always very drawn to that. And I think if I had started my career anywhere else, I don't know that I would be where I am now, only because when you're young, and you know this, when you're young and impressionable and you just really want to succeed and you really want to cover sports, you're just like, okay, you take advice from everyone and you're like, yep, what do I have to do? Like, I will get better at X, Y, Z. I will make sure that I, you know, do this or carry myself this way on the air. Right. And at The Score, they almost preferred you to be raw as opposed to polished, because then you mm-hmm. could find yourself on the air and figure out what works for you as opposed to being trained to sort of be like everybody else. And so The Score is a place where they throw anyone on the air. Like, they used to have the segment Extra Access. Did you ever watch that?
Is that where everyone just talks around the newsroom?
Yeah, like very yeah. like TMZ, like yeah, yeah, in terms yeah. of look.
But it was TMZ anyone, before TMZ.
Yeah, it's like anyone yeah. could go to the shootings for that. Anyone, mm-hmm. BAs, editors, interns, like didn't matter. Anyone could go and, you know, say their piece on whatever the topic was, and then you could make the cut or you could not make the cut, but you were available or you were welcome to go there and yeah. be a part of that shoot. And I think it says a lot about what the Score television network was all about, which was like, we are home of the hardcore. We might not have all the games, but we do have people who love sports and we are going to magnify that. And so I think because I started there, I learned, or at least was encouraged very early, to be myself. And so I think that has, you know, I owe a lot to The Score for that.
I think you nailed it with them being ahead of their time. And one thing that they did that I think maybe not ahead of their time, but it was certainly in the Canadian media market, was Live at The Score, which was on in the early afternoons, I believe. And yes. you were involved in that. And it was basically presented to combat syndicated shows that you'd see on TSN or Sportsnet, like Pardon the Interruption or whatever, but it was uniquely Canadian. You were part of those broadcasts. What comes to mind when you look back on that experience?
Oh my gosh, just growing up on the air, that's what it felt like. Because I had no live experience prior to that show. Mm-hmm. And even after I won the show and I started at The Score, I was cutting highlights. I wasn't really on television. I was sitting in an edit suite watching five games at a time, putting highlight packs together and sending a script yeah. to someone and really learning kind of the way most people start in this business, which is cutting highlight packs and really entry level position. So I, you know, owe a lot to that as well for being where I'm at. But I think for me, when Live at The Score became an opportunity for me, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I was just trying to survive. And I was very fortunate that I got to work with Cam Stewart, another legendary personality from The Score. Yeah. And, you know, he is probably, of all the people that I've worked with, he's probably the best at being exactly who he is on camera and off camera. Like, there is a very, very little difference between who Cam Stewart is off screen and on screen. And so we just had fun. I remember we would finish shows. I think we were on 3 to 5 or 4 to 6. I can't remember what the time slot was. But we would go down the street, King Street West to Gabby's. We would watch hockey all night, like me and Cam Stewart. Sometimes other people would come too, Renee sometimes people behind the scenes. Drink beer, watch hockey, go home, and then I'd get up the next day and go back to work and like do it all again. And it was just really fun. I had a really good time working with Cam and sort of figuring out how to do it because I didn't really know. And I was working with somebody that became a really good friend, and we had a lot of really solid memories and also a lot of mornings where we showed up to work pretty hungover. Like, okay, we're hungover, but we know what happened because we had money on those games. We were very invested in those late night West Coast hockey games. So it was just, I just remember it being a blast, really.
Well, that's the authenticity, right? Like it's about living and dying with sports. And you see that with the analysis, but also experiencing what the fans are doing, which is going to the bars, going to Gabby's and drinking and being hungover the next morning. Unfortunately, the Score did sell its channel and we've lost a lot of that to Sportsnet a long time ago. That meant you transferred your platform as well, but you used that platform to springboard to your next opportunity at NHL Network. What excited you the most about working at NHL Network when that opportunity was first presented?
Well, for me, hockey, and this goes back to my original audition process with the Score. Like, that was for a hockey show. Hockey was always what I wanted to do. I grew up playing hockey. My sister played, like, my sister's claim to fame is that she got knocked out by Natalie Spooner, like, way back when they used to play in the same league. And so I just grew up in hockey rinks. My dad's my best friend. I listened to sports talk radio when I was, like, 9 years old. Like, hockey has always been the goal, whether it's on TV, marketing, PR. Like, I didn't really care what I was going to do. I just wanted to be a part of the game because it was such a part of my foundation of my life. Mm-hmm. So for me, when the Score got purchased by Sportsnet, I was like, okay, this is good though. Like, they have the huge hockey deal. I'm, you know, hopefully I'll like survive, you know, layoffs and that sort of thing. And maybe I'll get an opportunity there.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And so I had been at Sportsnet for, I don't know, a few years, maybe 3.5 years-ish. And I had done some things. I had done some AHL games and I had did some college hockey and like CIS championship weekend. And I had done things here and there, but I hadn't really gotten to cover hockey outside of the highlight desk. And so for me, when the NHL Network opportunity came up and I went and I did the audition and I wasn't really sure what it was for. And then they told me about the show and how it would be 2 hours of live TV every single day covering the entire league. And it was basically pitched to me as a hockey variety show, like a hockey talk show. There'll be creative segments, there'll be player and coach interviews, there'll be highlights, analysis, opinion, like whatever it's going to be. And they wanted me to come there, push my personality, have a voice. You know, I was told really early on that I would get a lot of freedom. And so for me, it was a no-brainer because I wanted to cover hockey so bad and I got to check that box, but I also got to do it in a way where I could still be creative. Because at this point, when that opportunity came up, I had had a lot of success with Misplays of the Month. and Misplays of the Month, as much as it was just a simple countdown, you know, I produced that show. I came up with the idea to have the Raptors and the Blue Jays co-host that show. I sat in the edit suite from start to finish for Misplays of the Month, you know, the box in box look with the guys sort of watching the highlights and doing commentary. And so I had really grown to appreciate and respect sort of everything that goes into making a segment or a show work. And so I just really jumped at the opportunity. But before I left Sportsnet, I did, you know, go to my boss at the time and say, like, this is what I have. This is what I'm being offered. Is there any chance that I can cover hockey here? And he was very honest with me. And he was like, listen, I can't guarantee that you're going to get the experience covering the NHL in the next 2 years that you're going to get at NHL Network. Like, I can try to get you in filling in and reporting roles and that sort of thing, but I don't know that it's going to be to the magnitude of what this network is offering you.
Right.
And so I was really scared. I honestly was terrified because I felt like I had it pretty good in Toronto. But my dad, you know, said, I remember talking to my dad on the phone being like, I don't know what to do. And this will sound very vain, but I was like, I've had like some success here. Like, people know who I am here. I'm going to go there. What if I suck? What if I fail? What if I'm not good at live television? Mm-hmm. And my dad said to me, well, if you wake up in 2 years and you stay here, you wake up in 2 years and you're doing the exact same thing that you're doing right now, Misplays of the Month and highlights on the weekend, how will you feel? And I said, I'll feel disappointed. He's like, well, it's your answer. Like, you have to go because otherwise you're never going to know. And so I went, and in my first year, I did everything, Winter Classic, All-Star. Then I was on the ice, like 8 feet away from Alex Ovechkin as he's lifting his first Stanley Cup, like 13 years in the making or whatever it was. And I was just like, holy cow. Like, imagine if I had turned this down, like I wouldn't be here right now. So it's been a crazy, crazy journey.
2 hours of live TV. It sounds a lot like Live at the Score, just maybe without the need for hydration. What's been the best? I mean, you might have just touched on it there, but what's been the single best experience you've had so far since joining the NHL Network?
Oh my gosh. I do go back to that moment on the ice with Alex Ovechkin my first year, only because obviously it's Alex Ovechkin, one of the best goal scorers, maybe the best by the time it's all said and done. And I was such a huge fan. Like, I don't know where you were when it was Sidney Crosby versus Alex Ovechkin, like really like heated debates about like who was better, like very early on in their careers. And I always like, I love Sidney Crosby. He's one of the best in the world, but I was always such an Ovechkin fan. I was like, yeah, but like Ovi hits and like, he's big. And like, oh, you know, like I was just such a fan of the way that Ovi plays. And so for me, for it to come sort of all full circle and wanting to see Ovechkin win a cup, just as a fan of hockey for so long and seeing him, you know, just never really get that close. And then to finally do it and to be there for it, it was a very like pinch me moment. It was very like, holy, if I went back and told, you know, teenage Jackie that one day she would be 8 feet away from one of the greatest players ever lifting their first Stanley Cup, I would just not believe it. I would just be like, that's not in the cards for me. So that's a big one. Interviewing Wayne Gretzky in St. Louis was pretty surreal. And he probably is the type of person that remembers everyone's name, but like when he walked over and was like, hi Jackie, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm like, what is the what? What's happening? So that was pretty crazy. Yeah, there's been some really good experiences, and the all women's edition of NHL Now has been something that I'm really proud of too. But
I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, we just had the fourth annual all female NHL Now last Monday on the NHL Network. New contributors such as Blake Bolden, scout with the Los Angeles Kings. You've seen the majority of these celebrations, if not all of them. In your opinion, are we seeing real progress here? I mean, I heard you talk about it, how you don't want this to be a thing because then you've actually achieved what the end goal is. But can you speak toward the level of talent that is coming up and is available among the female broadcasting pool that's covering the NHL right now?
I think we see it. I think the all-female NHL Now is a great example of it. And the broadcast that we've seen on NBC and Sportsnet and different places that's all-female. I always, this conversation, I always make a point to say that we really have already come a really long way. And I think sometimes the conversation skews negative in terms of like how far we still have to go. But I think if you look at sports and you look at women, not just in hockey, but in all sports, and the opportunities that are there for them now, I think there are a lot of examples of how much the roles for women have grown. When I was a kid, if you were watching a woman in sports, she was either hosting the highlight desk or she was a sideline reporter. But we have women in sports now that are sports personalities. Katie Nolan is a great example. I think Renee Paquette, who was with WWE for a long time but has done a lot of stuff outside of that, is another great example. So I do think that women are getting different opportunities now that maybe weren't available to them in the past. I think even myself, like I do a segment every week where I give my opinion, impassioned opinion on something in hockey, and there's nobody there with me to support what I'm saying or to like encourage me along the way. It's just me. And so I think that in and of itself shows that, you know, there are a lot of networks and a lot of people, and a lot of them are men, that do support and accept women in that space and them having a voice. EJ Raddick is a great example of somebody that he just is so supportive and encouraging and welcomes me into every conversation. You know, like it's never been, I never had to ask for it. I never had to say to EJ, like, hey, I want to say something about this when we cover this on the show. Like he's just always, always brought me in, even though I am technically the host of the show. I'm not an analyst by any means, but he always has been that way. And so I think there are a lot of really great men in this business. As much as we like to focus on some of the hardships and the adversities that women face, I think there are a lot of people that are very accepting of women in sports. So I do think we've come a long way. I think the next step for me is the women that are playing the sports and creating a more viable league for them. I think female broadcasters probably have it better than female athletes, certainly in team sports, I would say. I think that the Dream Gap Tour has been amazing. I don't know how we go from the Dream Gap Tour to a viable league where women can be paid and do it for a living, like a real living. But I do hope to see that one day, because those women work extremely hard. They're incredible athletes. We love talking about them every 4 years at the Olympics. It's like must see hockey. Yeah. And, you know, I think they deserve more than that. And I think they're proving that with the Dream Gap Tour. And so I always think that, or at least I've been saying a lot the last couple of weeks, that I think female broadcasters probably have it better than female athletes. And I think that needs to change.
That's really interesting. I mentioned your creativity off the top, so I feel like you're the perfect person to ask this question too. What do you think the next step in hockey media's evolution is?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. What a question. Oh my gosh.
Maybe a little too meta?
No, I just think, and I think we're starting to see it a little bit more. You know, I think we see it on Hockey Night in Canada with BXL. Like, I do think that there are more personalities in sports that are willing to have fun and show their personality and not really take things super serious all the time. I love this game. I love hard-hitting analysis. I love, you know, the insiders of the world and what they bring to the table. But I do think that there is a lot of room for personality and character in terms of covering this game. So for me, it's just about pushing that forward more. I would love to see a show like NHL Now in Canada. We don't air in Canada right now. I don't think that there's a show like that in Canada right now that's really truly a hockey talk show. I know that there's, you know, there's pregame shows and that sort of thing, but I don't know that there's really a 4 to 6 interviews, highlights, debate segments, fun segments. I guess the closest would be maybe the show on TSN, That's Hockey. Is that still what it's called?
Yeah, that's more of a pregame show, it feels like. But that is it, yeah. I mean, I think the problem
version.
I think the problem in Canada right now is that they rely so heavily on just radio syndication, which is okay. I mean, Overdrive is one of the most successful shows, radio shows, certainly in North America, and it's so good. But that's just basically turned into your TV talk show, which is, I don't want to say limiting, but it's certainly It's not like NHL now, and there's a different market for different things. Like, there's, you know, people want to see visuals, people want to see all hockey debates, and right now I think it's more of a radio thing. And this is my last question, or last Jackie question. It might be actually more of a comment, but one thing I do admire about you is that despite you having this incredible job, it's that you're still grinding on the side, big time. You're making videos for your YouTube channel. You have this upstart mentality still in a lot of ways. So what drives you to continue on with projects like that?
I think for me, it just comes back always to, like, how far can I go with this? Like, how much can I really push it? Like, I've come a long way, but I am the type of person that needs to be challenged, and I need to be inspired in what I'm doing. And so for me, doing things like Feisty Friday, which again is for the show, but I also do it because I know that it's great. It's a great segment that is great on social media to get people talking. The overhyped, underhyped segments, those are completely driven by me. Like, there's mm-hmm. no aspect of the network involved in those. And I think it's just an opportunity for me to show my personality in my own way and get to things that I don't always have time for on NHL Now, just because we are covering the whole league and there's so much to get to on any given day, especially this year with how many games there are every night. So right. Yeah, I think it's just like, okay, I'm doing this, I'm really happy with this, but am I capable of more? Can I get better at certain things? Can I grow my brand and my audience online? I think that I can. And so mm-hmm. I want to try to do that and see what that takes. I'm a huge fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, and he's constantly talking about, you know, creating more and thinking about legacy. And I think that when it's all said and done, I would like to leave my career at the end of the day and be satisfied and feel like I emptied the tank and I really, really, truly put Jackie out there. Like, I was true to myself. People know who I am as a person and my passion for the game, and I'm okay with being looked at as, you know, a little bit more of a lighthearted hockey broadcaster. Like, that's okay with me. Some people aren't okay with that. I'm okay. I don't need to be taken super serious. So I just want to see how much I can grow, and yeah, and it's fun. Like, I have a good time. Like, I love hockey. I love making the segments, and I actually really enjoy getting in the comments and bantering back and forth with whoever is watching them every week and giving me their 2 cents. So, like, it's a way to also just connect with people who follow me on those platforms and who, you know, support me a lot. And I do think it's important to acknowledge those people. So I think that's my way of doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll cut that clip for you so you can have, because I'm sure you asked all the time about advice, breaking into the industry, and I think you just provided the perfect advice to someone who is trying to make their mark. Okay, let's get into a discussion more geared towards an NHL Network live spot and hand out some major awards at the halfway mark. You ready for that, Jackie?
So ready. Can't wait.
Okay, Hart Trophy. It seems like it's between three players at the moment. I'd probably argue it's closer to two. Connor McDavid, he's already halfway to 100 points in 30 games. Patrick Kane, who's driving the surprise Chicago Blackhawks. And I guess that third one, who might not be in the discussion as much anymore, as Austin Matthews, I think, still leads the NHL in goals, but this injured wrist seems to be having an impact on his play. So where's your lean? And you can go outside those top three, obviously, if it's your call. But where are you leaning, and why are you leaning that way?
Okay, so I lean Patrick Kane. And I lean Patrick Kane. I do. Listen, Connor McDavid is Connor friggin' McDavid. Like, he's unbelievable. It's incredible. Like, we're actually spoiled with what he gives us every year. And the fact that we haven't seen him in more postseasons is honestly just, it's a shame for hockey fans, because we deserve to see Connor McDavid, like, vying for a Stanley Cup every year. He's just so good. So I want to just preface my argument with that before the Oilers fans get at me in the comment section, if you will. So yes, Connor McDavid is far and away the best player on planet Earth. But when I look at this award, and I think we end up debating this every single year, no matter who we're talking about, is like, Patrick Kane is taking a team that has no business being in the conversation, and he's putting them in the conversation. And he's a guy that's doing it, missing two of their centers, maybe three right now. I think Strome's still out. So it's like, what the Blackhawks are accomplishing is, I don't think anyone saw coming. I don't think anybody had them even close to a playoff spot. And here they are. I don't know that they'll make it in the end. We'll see if they can sustain the way they've played over the whole year. But I think it comes back to, okay, it's MVP, it's most valuable to your team. There's no question Connor McDavid is the most valuable player to the Edmonton Oilers. But right. Where are the Edmonton Oilers? They're also in a division that most people look at as a little soft. I don't know, Justin, if you subscribe to that theory, but I do think there is something to that. And I think when we get to awards time, and for the record, I don't place a vote. So the people that make that place votes, how much are they going to weigh the division that these guys are playing in? Because Connor McDavid is feasting on some pretty weak defenses and goaltenders. Do you bring that into consideration? I kind of do. I don't know that it's fair to McDavid, but I can't help it. I just can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll change a little. I mean, he's already played the Ottawa Senators 7 out of 9 times, and that's been like complete feast every single time they've played Ottawa. So keep your eye on that and see what he does against the other 5 teams, I guess, that he's going to play. But this is actually the first time I'm voting on the major awards this year, and I'm I don't want a galaxy brain. Thank you. I don't want a galaxy brain the Hart Trophy pick. And I think doing anything but Connor McDavid is galaxy braining it to an extent, but you do make a good argument. But I think the Oilers are exceeding expectations too, I think. It is a weaker division, but they wouldn't be anywhere either without Connor McDavid, even though they have the reigning Hart Trophy winner in Leon Draisaitl. But this is the best player in the league, elevating a team that's not very good, and they're in pretty comfortably in the playoff spot right now. So I'm still going to go with Connor McDavid. I probably have to watch a little bit. See, we're a little sheltered here in Canada right now. I mean, you're in Canada right now, but we cannot get as many Chicago Blackhawk games as maybe we need to. I mean, I do have NHL Live, but it's just like Canadian matchup every night. So it's hard not to witness Connor McDavid and really, really appreciate it this year. Any rebuttal to that before we move on?
No rebuttal. I was just going to say, I know, you know, there tends to be a joke that's made all the time that, like, in Canada, they only cover the Canadian teams. But to be fair, like, you are catering to your audience. So, like, that totally makes sense. I don't know. I guess we'll have to say, it always comes back to this. I feel like we have this argument all the time with the Hart Trophy. Is it like you take a team that had lower expectations and a player on that team that's doing big things, or do you just take the person that's running away with, you know, the scoring race, which would be Connor McDavid? But we'll see.
Yeah, and we don't know how it's going to end up, but if he hits 100 points in 56 games, I mean, ooh, that's going to be tough.
Oh my gosh. I know. See, you're already like swaying me over to the other side, and I came on this show today. I was like, I will not be saying Connor McDavid, because this needs to be an interesting conversation. But Patrick Kane is ridiculous as well, and I just think the Hawks are such an incredible story.
Well, if we've accomplished anything, we've eliminated Austin Matthews, it seems.
Yeah, sorry, Austin.
Okay, let's do the Calder Trophy. And I was going to ask you who's going to win the Calder Trophy, but I'm not even going to ask the question, because the more appropriate question is, just how excited does the NHL Network get when Kirill Kaprizov is on the ice?
Oh my gosh, so excited. I feel like this is the most exciting the Minnesota Wild have ever been. And it's because of dollar bill Kirill. Like, this kid is incredible. Like, it's not just that he's really good. It's that he's got this like charismatic swagger to him that he's like a star, you know, he's got that it factor in terms of just, he draws you to him. And so I think that's an element of him that I'm excited to see as he goes through his career as well, because I don't know that we've seen a player with his swagger on the Minnesota Wild. You know what I mean? Like, they've had really good players there, but not players that have this charisma and swagger to the way they carry themselves and the way that they play. And I think that makes him really fun to watch, but he's also just, he's so good. He's obviously the front runner to win the Calder. I think the goaltender on that team is a very interesting conversation, and Kaapo Kähkönen and what he's doing. But because he's a goaltender, I think we got to see what the whole season looks like. I think he's on an eight game winning streak right now, like .940 save percentage. He's established himself as the number one. Like, so it's pretty crazy what he's doing as well. But I read, are you into advanced stats?
Yeah.
Are you into that stuff? Okay. Yeah. So I have one. I have one for dollar bill Kirill.
Go for it.
Scoring chances off controlled entries. He has 8.6 of them per game. So almost 9 a game. There's only 3 players that have more per game. And this is from a couple days ago, so these numbers might be slightly skewed. Connor McDavid, Patrick Kane, I believe. I might be messing that. No, Matt Barzal. Connor McDavid, Matt Barzal, and number one in this stat category is actually Jordan Kyrou in St. Louis, who people are probably sleeping on. But the fact, like, to me, I'm just like, all you have to tell me is Connor McDavid and Matt Barzal. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, dollar bill Kirill, he can score, he can pass, but he can also control the play. So he can bring the puck into the zone and create a scoring chance for his team all on his own. And I think that that says a lot about what he's capable of.
I'm glad you said Matt Barzal, because right when you said the name of that stat, I'm like, okay, that's the Matt Barzal stat. That's exactly what he does.
Yeah, I know. I messed it up. I was like, wait, it's not Kane. Who is it? It's Matt Barzal. Yeah.
I mean, I think the fun that Kaprizov provides is like permeating the entire team, which might be, you know, he's going to win, obviously, the scoring title amongst rookies. But I think his biggest accomplishment is making the Minnesota Wild really, really fun. And I think that's a huge difference
like,
from what we've seen before.
This? Like the Wild are cool now? They're cool? What?
They're always so low on the watchability Game Center Live rankings. And now that's like, if they're on Vegas versus that, like the top four teams in the West, like if they play each other, and obviously the Wild are included, it's a must watch. Okay, Norris Trophy. I think this is actually the hardest one for me. I don't think it's actually sorted itself out just yet. You've got dudes like Jeff Petrie and Darnell Nurse shining north of the border, so getting a lot of attention, at least in my household. And perhaps we didn't really expect that from them, but I think they might be in the conversation. And you got the normal guys like Victor Hedman, John Carlson, Drew Doughty getting back into it. He would be considered a normal guy, at least in previous seasons. Then you got the young guys, Cale Makar, Charlie McAvoy, maybe entering that elite tier. So where are you leaning with the Norris Trophy?
So for me, I lean Hedman. I know that's a really boring answer. I just think all around, he is just such a beast. Like, he's just so good. And when I look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, we're talking, I mean, they're ridiculous. They're head to toe. Like, they are, to me, the one of, if not the best team in the NHL this year as well. It's hard with the divisions to like compare them to a Vegas, I think. And that's something that I struggle with when we do like power rankings and stuff. I'm always just like, but like playing different divisions, they never play each other. Like, I just want to see Tampa and Vegas play each other. I want to see what would happen. But I think on Tampa specifically, like if you take Kucherov off that team, which we're seeing right now, they're okay. They're fine. You take Stamkos off that team, they're good. They're fine. Vasilevsky, they might struggle a little bit, but I still think they would be a powerhouse in the league based on what we've seen from McElhinney. He's been like serviceable. I think if you take Hedman off that team, he's irreplaceable. I think it damages them so much because it just shifts their entire back end. And I think over time, you would start to see them suffer from that. I think they could get through like a short-term Hedman absence, but I don't know that they could get through a long-term Hedman absence. So I just think he is their most valuable player. I think he's the best defenseman in the league. I think that he is just good at everything. It's annoying, actually. Like, it actually bothers me a little.
I don't disagree with you on Hedman. I think at some point we do have to award excellence, and I think he's sort of established the bar. I am interested in Jeff Petrie with all the goals he's putting up. But again, maybe a little bit easier in the North Division, and Victor Hedman sort of...
Sorry to cut you off. I read something. And I'm just going to, if I'm wrong, like I didn't like make notes for this interview, but I feel haven't like half of Petrie's goals come against the Canucks? Something like that. There's a stat.
That might be Toffoli. Certainly Toffoli's been an absolute terror to his old team. I think it might be a little bit more spread out for Petrie, but either way, he's getting the job done, and Toffoli's getting it done against his former team. But I think you got to go Hedman. I don't think his numbers are like that crazy good right now, and I expect them to improve. So even if he's in the pole position right now, I think the numbers will sort of bear that out a little bit more by the end of the year. So he'd probably be in the driver's seat for me too.
Let me ask you this, and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on social media, actually. The Norris, like we always look at offense so much when we talk about this award. How much do you take into consideration the defensive numbers for these guys?
I think you have to. I mean, I think it's gotten a little out of control with just like point totals. We're taking the highest point producer. But this year it's a little bit interesting. I mean, I've been watching it a little bit closer because I am actually going to submit a vote this year. And there's no one that really stands out from a defensive standpoint. That's what I was sort of alluding to with Hedman. Like the numbers aren't that great. And it's not great really with anyone who's in the discussion. It's great with people that you wouldn't ever include in the discussion. So
yeah.
I think those things will sort of, you know, we're only through, what, 30 games max for most teams. I think all that stuff will normalize a little bit. But I think you have to take that into account because, you know, we both sat in the stands in Toronto in the Toronto bubble last year and watched Victor Hedman absolutely dominate games. And I know the numbers would have borne that out. And I don't know if they are this year necessarily, but maybe that's something that comes into effect a little bit more when the games are the, you know, as important as they were in the bubble. And you know, that can't be really, you know, maintained throughout the course of a regular season, especially when all these games are condensed the way they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's go to the Vezina Trophy. And this could be, for me, the most enjoyable NHL award given out ever. If Marc-Andre Fleury, who is one of the best humans in the NHL, after getting kicked to the curb, soared through the back by Alan Walsh, memes, trade rumors, everything. If he comes back this year and not only steals the job back from Robin Lehner, I know he's been hurt, but wins the Vezina Trophy. I think he's in that conversation certainly right now, maybe the leader right now, but there are other guys that are, you know, in the mix. Neck and neck might be Andrei Vasilevsky, the reigning Vezina Trophy winner. And guys like Varlamov, Grubauer, Hellebuck are certainly in the mix as well. But I think right now, the numbers certainly suggest that Marc-Andre Fleury could win. And certainly he would be, I don't want to say that I'm going to be sentiment is going to pull me in any direction, but voters would love to vote for Marc-Andre Fleury. So would you vote for Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yes, he's so damn likable. It's a good thing I don't have a vote because, like, he would be a hard pick for me. Like, he's so good. He's got to be, like, the classiest, nicest guy in the league. Like, he – and he's like that to everyone, not just his teammates and people that, you know, he can – you know, that benefit him. Like, he's so good with the media. He's so classy. He has time. My favorite thing about Marc-Andre Fleury – and shout out to Ryan Whitney for telling me this. This is a Ryan Whitney tidbit. Mm-hmm. Marc-Andre Fleury, no matter how much money he makes, he could eat at the best places. He could go get the best steak in town no matter where he goes on the road when the world's normal. But the guy goes to Olive Garden over and over and over. His favorite place to go is the Olive
Garden.
Yeah, the Olive Garden. I'm just like, what? Like, you could go, like, just wine and dine at the finest establishments any city has to offer. And this guy's like, is there an Olive Garden here? Because that's where I want to go.
I feel like there wouldn't be an Olive Garden in Vegas. Like, Vegas is to another, like, several notches above our Olive Garden, you would think.
I think that's where that tidbit came out. I think we had Fleury on the show and Witt was the analyst and that was his question. I think he was like, oh, Flower, I know you love Olive Garden. Like, is there one out there in Vegas or like, how are you getting by without your Olive Garden? But I do think Fleury is certainly at the top of that discussion for me. I think Vasilevsky is right there with him. I mean, their numbers are very similar. But I'm so glad that you brought up Varlamov. I don't know that he'll win it when the season's over, but I feel like he gets so overshadowed or just he gets no love. Like even the Islanders on this crazy winning streak, and I'm in the U.S. I'm like a hop, skip, and a jump away from New York. Okay. Mm-hmm. And like, we're not talking about Varlamov enough. That's how I feel about it. And I know a lot of people, the reputation for the Islanders as well, like the team in front of him, he's not facing a lot. So it makes his job easier. That's the argument a lot of people like to put out there. But I looked at the numbers the other day and he's seen around the same amount of shots as Fleury and Vasilevsky this year. So like, I don't know what the quality of those shots is. I didn't dive into the advanced numbers, but in terms of the quantity, like he's seen the same amount of rubber as Fleury and Vasilevsky. So I don't want to hear that like he doesn't face anything because the Islanders are good defensively in front of him. That's garbage take. I don't like
it. I mean, if you're a goalie and you're in the Vezina discussion, if you have Barry Trotz as your head coach, you're at a slight disadvantage because everybody loves giving Barry Trotz credit and I don't blame them. But I mean, it's a built-in disadvantage, I guess, for Semien. Okay, last one. Jack Adams, plenty of candidates here. A lot of teams, you know, doing better than maybe we thought. A lot of coaches that are coaching really good teams to really good records. And I think we have to take that in account as well. But is there one that jumps out for you? I'm a Dean Evason guy right now because of the fun that the Minnesota Wild are having. So I'm going to throw out his name because I think he deserves to not only you know, relish in the success that the Minnesota Wild are having, but turning them into a team that is fun and plays the game the right way. Not the right or wrong way, because Barry Trotz plays the right way, probably, if we're being honest with yeah. ourselves. But Dean Evason has turned that team into a team to watch and a team that has success. And I think checking off those two boxes is worth at least a vote from me.
I love that. He's got to be in the conversation for sure with what the Wild are doing. And you look at their team last year, I mean, he's only been coaching the team for, has it even been a calendar year yet? It might just be a calendar year. Like, I can't remember when Bruce Boudreau got fired, but it was certainly past Christmas. So he's only been there for, let's say, 365 days, and the team looks completely different than they did a year ago. So I think he's in the conversation for sure. I will start by saying that I am historically very much the person that's like, well, this coach did more with less. Like, I always lean that way in the argument. But this year, I think it has to be Barry Trotz. I think what Barry Trotz has done with the New York Islanders in that division, and again, there's still half a season to go, but right now, if I was voting, I would give it to Barry Trotz. That's where I would go with my vote, because I think that the way the Islanders play, the competition that they face every night in that division, and what they're doing, to me, he deserves all the credit in the world. So I would go Barry Trotz, but I do like Dean Evason as well. I think the Wild are a great selection. Jeremy Colleton, I think people are talking about him as well in Chicago, deservedly so. But what I will say is that they are getting pretty good goaltending from Kevin Lankinen that I don't think anybody saw coming. And I think that his goaltending and what he's been doing thus far has just kept the Hawks in games. And I think with the way Patrick Kane is playing, if there's a chance, like if you're within a goal, like Patty Kane, he's going to go showtime on you. And like, that's it. It's going to happen. So I don't know. I don't want to take anything away from Jeremy Colleton, because they are missing like all of their centers, but
yeah,
I don't know. I sense something about the goaltending there. I stray away from that team, but he's in the conversation, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, as the old adage goes, show me a good goaltender, I'll show you a good coach. And I think that applies to the three we mentioned. But also Joel Quenneville, who's having some success with Chris Driedger. I think those four are they're very similar, and they're all having unexpected success, but they're all having unexpected success behind great goaltending. So I think those might be your four.
I think in Florida, too, I think that the changes they made and the players that they brought in have really been paying big dividends in Florida as well. So credit due there as well.
Certainly. Okay. Do you have time for a little Maple Leafs talk?
Of course. All the time.
I know you have a keen eye on the Maple Leafs all the time. So I do need it. I do need a heat check. best record in the NHL until it wasn't. Now the Leafs are without a regulation win in 6 games. Are we seeing the same old Maple Leafs manifest themselves here, destined for failure, a team that's only being propped up by the strength or weaknesses of its opponents? You mentioned the Canadian division being pretty weak, or is this still a legitimate Stanley Cup contender that's just hit a speed bump recently?
Are we surprised that the Leafs have fallen off a little bit here? No, I'm not surprised. I think every team kind of has a little slump at some point in the season, even a shortened 56 game season. What concerns me about this stretch of games for the Leafs is that I feel like they had created almost a new identity for themselves in the way that they're playing prior to what, like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know, the actual time is a weird thing for everyone right now, I think, but I think that they don't look like themselves and they seem a little bit lost. And that won't concern me if they figure it out and turn it around in the next week, because I think it happens over the course of a season. But I always come back to this with the Toronto Maple Leafs, is that when things get hard, they tend to turn in on themselves. And so because of that, I can't fully believe in the Leafs until I see them overcome something. And we've never really seen them overcome something. I mean, the 3-goal comeback in the bubble was awesome and it was great. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. The Leafs, they're going to battle through adversity. They're going to win this series. And then they got shut out in game 5. It was not what we expected. So for me, I think that they just seem a little bit lost. I think that until they overcome a hump, a real actual hump, then I will never fully allow myself to believe in the Leafs, which sounds really sad, but I think that's spoken like a true, like, born and raised Leaf fan. I've just been, I've been disappointed so many times that until I see them win a playoff series, I will never fully buy in. But I do think that this is the best chance and the best the Leafs have looked in a really long time. And maybe this is just a bad stretch of games here. We'll see.
Yeah, I tend to lean that it's just a bad stretch of games, but there is a worrying thing because we've seen every year it seems they really turned a corner. Look at that win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've really turned the corner and they're going to do it for real this time. And then they always follow that up with the same old Leafs style performance. And I think we just saw that for the first time, the same old Leafs over the last 10 days. But I think it ultimately is going to come down to Freddie Anderson in the end. If they're going to perform in the playoffs, either Freddie Anderson gives them an opportunity to do that or Frederik Andersen takes away that opportunity. So in your opinion, and you could be quick with this one, is Freddie Anderson, are you a Freddie Anderson believer or a Freddie Anderson skeptic?
So I have defended Freddie Anderson in my family's group chat for years because my sister has been anti-Freddie for, I guess, like 3 seasons now, probably. If my math is right. So she is very like, he doesn't make the big save. He doesn't make the timely save. Like, I'm done. Like, my sister has been out on Freddie for a long time. And I have been like, Marcy, you can't just, that's my sister. You can't always blame the goaltender for some of these losses. Like, the Leafs can't put themselves in a position where one goal is going to change the narrative for them or whatever it is in any given circumstance. But I feel like lately she's starting to pull me over to that side where I'm just like, when I watch the game, I'll put it this way. I get nervous in a close game with Freddie Anderson in net.
Yeah, it's not.
And I hate saying that, but that's just the reality of like the pit in my stomach when I'm watching. I'm just waiting for like a deflating goal. But I do think that like if you're legit and you're a contending team, then you have to find a way to overcome that and play better in front of him or figure it out. I don't know. It's a great question. I know that's probably what a lot of the conversation in Toronto is centered around right now. Is Freddie the guy? If he's not the guy, then what? Because we're year what of, you know, this core team of the Maple Leafs supposed to be the core that's going to get it done and take Toronto to the promised land for the first time in 1,000 years. If it's not Freddie, who is it?
And if he's not the guy, then you have wasted probably the best opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. If you're the Maple Leafs, I think the window is as wide now as it's ever going to be. And if he's the one that fails, especially this year, if he's the one that fails to give you that opportunity, then you're certainly going to be kicking yourself afterwards.
Oh my gosh. It's daunting to think about, really, because I do believe that this year is the best path to a cup final that the Leafs will have for a long time. Like, they're not in the same division as Tampa and Boston and some of these powerhouses. So I don't know. I don't know. I saw Dubas was taking a lot of heat. Yes. Was it yesterday? Yeah. On Twitter.
Is he? Well, if you're Kyle Dubas, last one on the Leafs, if you're Kyle Dubas, do you push all your chips into the table?
I think you have to go for it this year. I think if the Leafs are who we saw for 80% of what we've seen so far, then they're a team that can win. And I think that you have to strike while the iron's hot. You got to go for it. And I think that they would be silly not to, with the way that they have looked in that division compared to everyone else. They have looked, for the most part, like they're far and away the best team. So I would go for it.
Okay, and finally,
to win.
You definitely do. Maybe Jack Campbell will get right at some point and appease all the Leaf fans calling for his solidification, I guess, into the crease. I don't know if I use solidification the right way or not.
You did.
But a lot of people want him to be playing more than he's been given the opportunity. Okay, so you've teased it a few times, Feisty Friday being your new segment and your crown jewel. I've mentioned your creativity, and that all comes together with Feisty Friday. It's an opportunity for you to air grievances or get something off your chest heading into the weekend. It's usually reserved for the end of the week, but I would like to give you the opportunity to vent now. If anything is bugging you coming out of the weekend, is anything you want to say before we sign off that you'd like to give us a taste of a Feisty Friday on a feisty Monday?
Okay, we already touched on it a little bit, but I'm pretty feisty about Semyon Varlamov right now because nobody is talking about him, at least not to the extent that they're talking about Fleury and Vasilevsky. And I think Varley has great numbers, and numbers don't lie. So to me, I do think that Varlamov deserves to be part of that Vezina conversation. He's been lights out on the best team in his division, and it's the toughest division in the NHL in terms of the powerhouse teams, or the competitiveness, I guess I should say, in those top five in the East. So I love that, but we already talked about that, so I'm going to go a totally different route, and this is not planned and totally off the cuff. Did you see Erik Karlsson's comments about San Jose, and I didn't come here to be part of a rebuild, and yada, yada, yada. Whatever, yeah. He's allowed to feel however he wants to feel. I wouldn't want to be part of a rebuild either, so I don't hate on him for not enjoying losing. Like, that would be silly. Of course, he wants to be on a winning team. But his use of the word precision in that statement, did you read the whole statement?
He kept saying, you're going to have to remind me.
So I wish I should have pulled it up. He kept saying something to the effect of, like, my precision within this organization. And I was like, does he mean position? It's definitely not precision. That is not the word that I think he means to use here. Check it out. You'll understand what I mean. English major. I was just like, this is not, I don't know what he means.
Unfortunately, Erik Karlsson has lost a bit of that precision, and now the San Jose Sharks are, descending straight into that rebuild that he doesn't want to be a part of, because, frankly, he's not the player he used to be. So
he's not.
It's as much Erik Karlsson's fault as anyone else's, but he's still getting the bag, so
he can just be happy for him. Tell him.
Feisty.
This is feisty
on a Monday. Awesome, Jackie. Thank you so much for being generous with your time. Thank you for coming on, and keep up the outstanding work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.